This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Corey along with you today. Unfortunately, Jason's unable to join us this week as he has some work commitments, but he will be back in due course as I will not be on the podcast next week as I will be on holiday. Joining me today are not two debutants to the podcast, but making their season debuts for us this season, Andy Buckley-Taylor and Chris Smith. Andy, Chris, how the heck are you guys? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. Fine, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Andy, how are you doing?
Yeah, it's good. It's been too long, but glad to be back on the show.
I'm glad to have both of you. Thank you for spending your evening with me. I'm sure there's nobody else in the world who'd want to spend their evening with me other than you two guys, as testament to my always open evening social schedule. So we will hearken to make it a productive evening. Chris, Andy, I think it's safe to say last weekend was pretty positive for Derby, as they do pull out the victory 1-0 over Fleetwood. Positive in the fact that we got another 3 points on the board, positive by the fact that we picked up our first home win, but still two wins from the opening, four league games now. So 6 points on the board. You got to start somewhere. You've got to build. I think there's still some question marks over the team and Paul Warren and things like that, which we're going to discuss. But Andy, I want to come to you first. Thoughts on the victory against Fleetwood Town?
Yeah, I was reasonably positive. I mean, we went into the game already with three players who we expect to participate in the first team squad out injured. Fleetwood, a side that took 4 points off us last season.
Could you imagine if we had those 4 points, we'd have been in the playoffs?
Yeah, exactly. So basically, they stopped us from going up. Fleetwood had chances. They hit the post like they did last season. We had chances as well. The first 10 minutes that opened the game, you know, we was playing it at like 100 mile an hour. We've got, Paul Warren seems to be set on his 3-5-2 formation. I've got a friend who's a season ticket holder at Rotherham. He says Warren will play the 3-5-2. If he feels he's got the players to do it. And that was his favourite formation over at Rotherham. It's not my favourite formation. And he also says quite a lot of the games that he won over there, they were ground out victories. You know, he knew how to do that just enough to win. But, I mean, this is the sort of division where grinding out results is what is quite common, you know, and we're 3 points off the top of the division. Very, very early days. What does it look like going ahead? I think we still need some new faces in. We definitely need a creative midfielder, perhaps another one up top. And also, I'd possibly be looking at a right-sided wingman as well. We know Nathaniel Mendes-Lang prefers playing as a right winger. Isn't a big fan of playing as a wingback. Now, to my mind, Kane Wilson was probably brought in to play the wingback position, but like at Bristol City, he's now picked up another lengthy injury. Maybe he will dip into the loan market and we could see two or three faces coming in on loan, like we did last season.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we're going to talk about signings and injuries a little bit later in more detail in the podcast. Chris, are you pleased? You've got to be pleased with the fact that we got 3 points on the board. And, you know, if both of you gents are active, very active on social media, you know, Derby lose a game, didn't have the best start to the season. And, you know, it's all doom and gloom, Paul worn out, this, that, and the other. Chris, did the Fleetwood game and the performance at Fleetwood, because there's two different facets to this. There's the result and then there's the performance. obviously a lot of things, winning always quells everything on social media, which is the only way that you can test the real litmus test of any opinion is on social media. We all know this. Chris, did the result please you and did the performance please you?
Well, the result pleased me. I mean, I've kind of found myself at the last couple of games saying this is all about results at the moment because the team's not right. I think everyone can see the team isn't right. We're obviously three or four players short at least, which we'll talk about later. I mean, I think it was better against Fleetwood, the balance was better. I mean, Liam Thompson played a blinder, but you're never in a million years going to say he's a better player than Max Bird, because he isn't. And Max Bird is, in my opinion, our best player. But the balance in midfield was definitely better with having him being busy and playing a little bit in front of the other two guys. You know, Max, Corey and Conor Hooran are kind of the same player, in my opinion. And the balance all season has just been wrong. You know, we've not replaced Knight. We haven't got a number 10, as Andy just said. So I think Liam being in there, just doing his busy thing, he did play well. You know, I'm not just saying he was running around. He played well. Obviously, going back to the four, you know, Sonny Bradley, you know, taking him out the firing line was definitely the right thing to do. You know, I don't think he's become a bad player overnight, but he's definitely had a bad start. So I think taking him out was a good thing to do. Cashin looked a different player in the four. You know, he's been woeful this season, but was not far off man of the match Saturday. And actually playing two up top. So again, you know, I keep hearing this 3-5-2, 5-3-2, Warne's favourite formation. The thing that's annoyed me about that this season is we haven't actually played two up top in any game. You know, Collins has been more isolated than ever. But again, to Andy's point, you know, we did start off 100 miles an hour. I think having Mendes playing back wide instead of floating around in this like nothingness role that he's been doing, in kind of this vague inside forward number 10 thing, it just looked better. And it was better. I mean, again, we're hanging on for 20 minutes against Fleetwood at home. We can't really be punching the air about that, but we can definitely be punching the air about a clean sheet, winning 1-0, points on the board, play 2-1-2. It's not the worst start in the world, and we move.
Yeah. And Chris, that's a good point there. That's what I wanted to bring up my next point of discussion with you, gents, is, you know, James Collins has looked isolated for most of the season. He obviously didn't have the best debut season. Best debut season was overshadowed a little bit by the great season that David McGoldrick had. He's looked isolated this year. What are your thoughts on the two forwards going forward, Martin Waghorn, Connor Washington? Because when I looked at the game, they looked busy. They looked industrious. You know, you have a bit of the pace and the guy to stretch your back line in Connor Washington. You have Martin Waghorn who, you know, basically lives inside 12 yards and he'll put, you know, you put that, give the ball to him, he's going to have a shot on goal. And I think at this level, he's more times than not, they're probably going to go in. Fantastic goal from Martin Waghorn. What do you think? Do you think that's the future? And by the future, I mean the immediate future, the near-term future of Derby County is to have Waghorn and Washington up front, Chris?
I think it is on the basis that it worked on Saturday and we won. I think it was monumentally harsh on Collins. And I know Collins is kind of sort of becoming the new Keo in terms of splitting the fan base, but I actually think he's had a good start to the season, and I think he was more a victim of the formation. So, you know, it's been well documented that ludicrous substitution against Oxford where Collins is battling away on his own, he comes to bring Washington on and he takes Collins off, you know, when Collins was begging for a bit of help. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, you know, Washington's busy, he stretches the line, which Collins doesn't do. Waggy's obviously a quality operator at this level. And I think, to be fair, it's a little bit harsh on Collins, in my opinion. But I think that, you know, I'll be staggered if they're not starting together at Peterborough on Saturday.
And Andy, do you think it's a bit systematic and it may be the right thing to do to drop James Collins with the injuries that we have in the fullback positions? We know that he linked up extremely well with Joe Ward in preseason. I mean, I think offhand, there was at least two, maybe three goals that I can remember that Joe Ward clipped in. And, you know, Collins, I did the little head nod on the camera. I don't know why I did the little head nod, but he whipped in a couple of goals there, James Collins. And with the fullbacks being a kind of a problem issue again this season, because you obviously, like you mentioned, Andy, you know, the injury to Joe Ward, the injury to Kane Wilson. Do you think that right now, before we can get them fit, while Paul Warren has to kind of sort out a new role from Collins, it's probably better to take him out the firing line because we can't really play to Collins' strength, which we saw in preseason was crosses into the box, knockdowns, headers, that kind of thing. And now we have a different type of strike force to deal with.
I think James Collins plays better at, he's more suited to a front three where you've possibly in a 4-3-3 where you've got width, you know, all the way through the lineup. And natural wingers, natural fullbacks all overlap with the wingers, balls played through. But, Joe Ward's injury is a big, big blow. He was very highly regarded at Peterborough, and I know their fans were absolutely gutted to lose him. I think Washington and Waghorn pair up better. You have Washington running off the shoulders of defenders. Waghorn, for me, if you're given the chances, he'll score. I think in this division, it's not unreasonable to expect Martin Waghorn to get 15 to 20 goals. You know, he had a miserable time at Coventry, but he's reaching, well, he's over 30 now, so he's reaching that stage of his career where he's probably not as pacey as he used to be. But if you look at David McGoldrick before he came to Derby the previous season in the Championship, he wasn't scoring quite so regularly. That moved down, and the experience that he brings, you know, it could be very useful. I had mixed feelings about re-signing him, but to be quite honest, and unless you're going to be looking at £750,000 plus, who else are you going to bring in? For me, I think Waghorn and Washington will be the starters, but James Collins could be a good impact player to bring in off the bench. But see, the options, because of the injuries, the options of changing formation aren't particularly there at the moment because the squad is so small. Collins can do the business, but I don't think the Paul Warren style of play particularly suits the role that he's familiar with playing up front. But, I mean, how many goals did he get last season? Was it 11, 12 in all competitions? So, if we could have three strikers that are getting 10 to 15 goals, Conor Hourihan, he will chip in with 7 and 8 goals. And if we look at Plymouth last season, didn't their top scorer get 13 goals? So,
Plymouth were more of the aggregate, Andy, which I think, you know, we've talked the last couple of weeks on this podcast, and I think it's well documented that unless we can bring a forward in who can bang in 30, you're obviously going to have to go with the aggregate option. And I agree with you, Andy. I think, you know, Martin Waghorn was a signing that, you know, he was kind of released from Coventry and, you know, people go, oh yeah, not him again because we've already had him and whatnot. But I do think at this level, Martin Waghorn can score goals. To be honest with you, Martin Waghorn is basically my new favorite player right now because I don't know. We've just had him before. He feels comfortable. He feels like somebody that I know, you know, it's like an old mate being reunited with him. And I think when you have, sorry, Andy.
You know what, Corey, Martin Waghorn is one of three players I think we signed 10 years after we should have signed him, along with Curtis Davis and David Nugent.
Yes, we didn't want to pay like the million for David Nugent, but who knows? 10 years later, we got him for free. So who's really the winner there? I ask you that question to the listeners. Who really wins? Chris, I want to talk to you about the injuries at Derby because, and then conversely also how this affects the transfers going forward, because I'm looking at this squad and I was looking at it before those injuries were announced. And I'm thinking Derby need at least four players because we knew squad depth was going to be an issue. We have to have some more warm bodies in the building. We have three injuries now. We essentially need seven players because those players are out for a long period of time. Joe Ward's ripped the fat off of his heel, apparently. That sounds grotesquely painful. I don't know how you do that. I've been feeling my heel trying to figure that out, and I just don't know how that works out, but it sounds incredibly painful, something I never want to experience. Kane Wilson's ripped the hamstring off his bone, I believe, or the tendon, and Max Bird has some ankle issues that's going to keep them all out from 8 to 10 weeks. So the treatment room will be busy as those three will continue to bond there. But, you know, that 8 to 10 weeks, Chris, that can stretch even longer, because that's 8 to 10 weeks, you know, to get over your injury. Then you kind of have to get match fit. You have to play, you know, maybe a 21s game or something like that, because if you thrust him straight in, you know, the risk for re-injury is there. So really, it's safe to assume it's probably going to be 12 weeks for all of them, which, you know, where I'm sitting in the States, that's Thanksgiving. That's, you know, the end of November, roughly, give or take a bit. Good Black Friday sales around that time. So we'll, you know, it's always on my calendar. But how does this affect the transfer policy going forward, Chris? And are you concerned with the lack of activity that has happened over the last couple of weeks?
Okay, two answers then. So I don't think it affects what we need to do a lot, controversially. So if Max Bird hadn't have got injured, I think it's highly likely he would have gone to Hull. And I think we needed different midfielders anyway. So we needed a number 10, and we needed a combative or a box-to-box type midfielder. We needed that anyway. We still need it, right? So as I said, you know, my previous piece, I think it's well spoken. Corey, Connor and Max are kind of the same type of player. So I don't think the midfield requirements transfer-wise have changed at all. Yeah. I think the right fullback, I think you probably need to loan one. Yeah. I think Jake Rooney has proved prior to Saturday and definitely on Saturday that he is more than capable of playing right fullback, either in a flat back four or on a right wing back. Obviously Mendes or Barkhuizen could potentially play there. Certainly in home games they could. So you maybe need to loan a right back, but I think that's it. So I think the midfield's a red herring. Now, in terms of the transfer policy, the transfer progress generally. So that's a totally different conversation. So, you know, I think this is a massive 9-10 days, whatever it is, from now till the end of the window, because, you know, depending how that goes, and I totally get that the whole picture could change at like 5 to midnight on deadline day and we could all be doing cartwheels. But so, and, you know, it's one of those ones where I could do a massive rant like now, and by 8 o'clock tonight, we might be looking at three midfielders doing who have been recording their videos this afternoon, you know. So and I would, by the way, I'd love that to happen. So I'd love to be proved wrong. But, you know, I'm concerned, you know. So we're sitting here talking about, you know, we knew Jason. So, you know, when I was sat in the stand at Hillsborough and Jason Knight's on the pitch clapping the Derby fans and crying for 10 minutes after all the rest of the players have gone, I knew he was leaving, right? Everyone knew he was. So let's assume everybody else knew he was leaving. So why haven't we been looking at box-to-box midfielders, or, you know, kind of energetic midfielders or powerful, combative midfielders? You know, where have they been? Yeah. You know, we had the fourth best defence in the league last year, I think. We've signed a plethora of defenders. Now, I get Warren's obviously trying to fit, you know, the 5-3-2, and I get Curtis left, and I get we had no fullbacks. But I just think, you know, the problems in the team aren't new, right? So, I'm hoping, you know, and I hear it all, like the market is difficult, and I hear about budget, and I get that, yes, we're financially secure, but we're not financially flush. So I understand all that, and I understand all the moving parts with agents and players, but I see so many other clubs signing, I don't see us linked for any smart signings, you know. Well, Billy Sharp, Jordan Rhodes, Godden from Coventry, you know, these are like, they're like Football Manager signings. They're not clever signings. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I'd love to be proved wrong. And, you know, even Saturday, you know, Warren says, oh yeah, we're sorted. We've got a midfield. It's all but done. Hopefully we can get him out Saturday. But if not, so, you know, well, where's he? So it's, so
I think he said that 10 days previous as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of, I think the jury's out massively. So, as I say, it can change in a wink, you know, stuff moves. But, you know, with 10 days to go, my big concern here is that none of these problems are new. You know, for the team to be so imbalanced, and, you know, I've been to every game, right, this season. I don't think we've been convincing in any of them. In fact, I'd argue probably Wigan was our best performance. You know, I mean, Burton Albion away, if we'd have played a better team there, we'd have got battered first half. You know, we were awful until the second goal went in. You know, I don't know. I'm massively in the half, you know, cup full camp always. But yeah, it's a big 10 days, Corey. And, you know, let's hope that somebody somewhere has got a cunning plan and it's all going to fall into place.
So, Chris, you talk about the energetic box-to-box midfielder, and I'll ask you this question. It might not be an apples-to-apples comparison, but could Liam Thompson fill that role? Because we know he's got energy. We know he can run around, right? We know he can do the work rate.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, because he hasn't got the physicality. Yeah. So Liam Thompson played in the same team as my boy for many years. So I used to watch him play Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. So I actually know him. And so I've got all the time in the world for him. And but I think he's got the energy. But I think what we're missing is some physicality. And so Liam's a top player. But I think that what we need is somebody with a bit more brawn and a bit more athleticism and a bit more combative. I think Liam's like a low centre of gravity, tricky player, definitely busy and definitely more than worth his place in the team. But I think we need someone with a bit more physicality.
Andy, are you starting to get concerned about the repeating of the continual mantra? It used to be 24 to 48 hours for Derby, but over the past, you know, month or so, it's been, we hope to have a signing in the building. You know, we're really close. I hope to have one in before the next game. I hope to have one in on Thursday. Are you starting to get concerned about the lack of transfer activity and, you know, Warren's constant assertion that someone's going to be coming in, alas, just for nobody to come in? And Chris, before Andy answers, there's bound to be some sort of transfer movement, because every time that we record, there is always a big breaking Derby news. That's just what happens here on the Rams Review podcast. Andy.
Yeah. Let's hope it works this time. I don't think Warren is the sort that will sign somebody for the sake of it. In the past, we've gone out and brought in transfers that, quite frankly, haven't really fitted in. Nick Blackman, Kechi Anya, you know, they were massive wastes of money. I mean, you're talking about millions there. One surprised me that hasn't been made. Rotherham fan again said that Richie Barker was often seen talking to Wes Harding, you know, over to Rotherham. I thought Harding would be a nailed on signing, or at least a player we would have attempted to bring, because apart from being a warm player, he's versatile as well. You know, he can play in the fullback position or the center of defense. Yeah. We don't know what sort of budget he's got. Some teams will try it on as well. If the player's still under contract, now we can actually buy, or albeit to within the business plan that we've got, teams will try it on with Derby, because even though we're in a business plan, we are allowed to buy, but I think there must be some kind of ceiling on the fees that we can pay and the personal terms that we can also afford. Now, who was the striker that a lot of fans were mentioning all over the summer? Did he go for around about £500,000?
Alfie May from Cheltenham.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can't afford Alfie May at £500,000. Was it £500,000 or was it £750,000 or whatever?
It was half, I believe.
Yeah, and he's around about 30, 31 years old. Now, if we are not able to sign such players like that, you know, we're looking at either loans or lower divisions, aren't we? And or obviously out of contract players. So it doesn't surprise me greatly. And the fact of the matter is that when David Clohes took over ownership of the club, he stated that it would take, was it 5 years to get back to how we was as prior to the meltdown. So I really don't know. I mean, I hate being in this division. I would like us to get out of it sooner rather than later. But then again, obviously, we're going to try and not make the same mistakes of the past. What we could do with is an Harper Cox now, who brought in bargains like Bobby Davison and Trevor Christie and co. But, you know, those sort of players aren't available. I can't think of a striker who's a free agent or playing at the same level that I'd be headhunting tomorrow. Can you guys?
No, I think that's a good point, Andy. I think I was talking about this the other day with my dad is, you know, we were watching Monday Night Football last night and, you know, Declan Rice, 100 million, Moises Caicedo, 100 million, Enzo Fernandez, 100 million. And basically any half decent player, not to say that they're half decent, but any really half decent player, 100 million seems to be kind of the kind of going rate. And then everybody's kind of based off of that. And I think what you're starting to see is you're starting to see a trickle down effect throughout the transfer market in that, you know, obviously Victor Gorkez went from Coventry, Gustavo Hamer went from Coventry to Sheffield United. They had a bit of money. They bought Ellis Sims in. They bought the American Haji Wright in. You know, so you're starting to see 8 million pound players that are playing now in the championship. You're starting to see players that can bid. And then unfortunately that trickles down to the lower echelons of the pyramid because teams now go, well, wait a minute, you know, if this guy's worth this, what's this? You know, we've had this week, you know, 4 reported bids from Brighton turned down for Aaron Cashin, upwards of 3 million pounds. You know, you look at Aaron Cashin and you think, okay, he's played essentially a season and a quarter of men's real football, but it's been in the lower echelons of the championship in League One. You know, what's really his value at? Derby always tend to sell their players for peanuts anyway. But, you know, I think you're starting to see a trickle-down effect, and we know that goals win you games. Everybody in world football is looking for that striker that's going to hit them to promotion or hit them to a championship or hit them to a title or a cup or something like that. So every single team is looking for that, and I think that's the unfortunate situation that we're in, Andy, in terms of strikers. And like Chris said with midfielders is people know that these you know, one, that it's Derby come knocking. They know that they could probably, oh, your ceiling's this amount? We're going to ask for this amount because we know that this is an amount. You know, if I say to Chris, you know, how much can I buy your house for? And he gives me a figure. Or if he says my house is worth 10 pound, you know, and I go, well, I'll just give you 10 pound for it. Why would I give him 12 when I know he only wants 10 for it because that's all he can pay. You know, so it's things like that. And I think you're just starting to see the transfer market trickle down. And unfortunately, the timing for Derby, it's just checking over into a period of time where we could potentially spend some money, but we're not going to be able to get them because the transfer fees are inflated. You know, I remember this summer I spoke to Andy Appleby and he was saying that when they tried to get rid of players, when they got down from the Premier League, the financial crisis happened. And so that there weren't as many teams trying to get, not necessarily the Derby players, but there wasn't as much transfer activity going on. And I think with the market, the way it is exploding at the upper divisions in European and world football, you know, especially with the Saudi deals being done, that trickles into the European leagues, which trickles into England, which then filters down to League One. It makes it incredibly difficult to try to bring in any sort of player because, you know, Chris, I mean, you mentioned there Alfie May, half a million for a 31-year-old striker whose highest level was League One. I don't know if you'd have gotten that a few years ago for him, but, you know, it just seems like if that's the going rate for a 31-year-old that's popped in a few goals, you know, what would it be for a 26-year-old who's popped in a fair fewer goals but has a higher ceiling or has a higher, more potential, or I can get a few more years out of it, starts to adjust. And I think you're starting to run into a strange situation. So it will be very interesting to see what happens between now and transfer deadline day, because bottom line is I don't think we should be signing players for the sake of signing them. But if we don't sign players, there's no chance of a top six finish this year because we just don't have the people. Chris?
Yeah, I was going to, I mean, one thing that's really disappointed me is the lack of loans. So, you know, everything that you've just said there, I get it. I appreciate we're shopping in a certain area, but, you know, kind of, this kind of, and again, Warn, I mean, this is what let us down in January. Warn's reluctance to sign players who aren't absolutely gift wrapped and ticking every single box. You know, he's so risk averse in the transfer market. And I don't want to pay 5 million for a Ketchianya any more than anyone else does. But, you know, kind of, I just think that we're at a point here where with the loan market, you know, to me, any, you know, you've got to kind of, he safely said he doesn't want first time loans, right? If I'm Liverpool, Man U, Man City, Arsenal, they should be chomping at the bit to send any of their first time loans to us. You know, 30,000 people expected to win every week, demanding crowd, beautiful pitch, you know, in a league where, you know, the footballs, they're going to grow up quick. You know, I just can't see how coming to play at Derby is not a good thing. So I'm just staggered that we have no loan signings. And if you look at any of the successful, any team, in fact, that gets promoted, there's always 3, 4, 5 loan players in any, and I can't even, Plymouth last year, it pays me to say it, the Forest promotion team, that 4 or 5 of their key players were all loan players. Even Derby's most successful teams, look at our most successful teams. You know, the core of our best teams in recent history have all had been quality loan signings that just raise the bar for everybody else, you know. So, I hope I'm proved wrong and 3 or 4 kind of Arsenal, Man City, youth teamers, or even Forest reserve midfielders, as is rumoured, land on loan, you know, reasonably imminently. But, you know, I just think it's criminal that, you know, we could. And again, I get the whole thing about wait till the squads are announced, wait till things settle down, who's in, who's out. I even get Warren's point about 9 subs, you know, making a difference. But, you know, to me, there should have been 2 or 3 loans that were lined up, ready to go, done, and then keep 2 or 3 in the bank for, you know, towards the end of the window when the squads settle. And even then, if you sign people on loan, if they are crap or they're duff, it doesn't matter, does it? Send them back, you know, and get some more in January, you know. So we'll see.
It's a good point, Chris. And I think, you know, you just said that point there. And I'm thinking, you know, if I'm a top manager at Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester City, Manchester United, those managers are kind of going to already know who's in their squad. They're not going to say, hey, I mean, Chelsea did play a 17-year-old the other day. He played 9 times for Charlton last year. Bizarre anomaly, because Chelsea is just a bizarre anomaly. But, you know what I mean? Most of the Jurgen Klopp's going to know what team he's going to pick for the Premier League. Pep Guardiola is going to know what team he's going to pick in the league. He's not going to sit there and say, oh, let me take another look at this young lad in the academy who may or may not do it. I mean, they've just spent $55 million today on Jeremy Doku, the Belgian winger. So he's going to know what his squad is. You know what I mean? So I agree.
They have development plans as well.
Yeah,
for the young players, they have development. They have development plans that they've agreed. So they've probably got a 3-year plan for every young player they've got, going League One, Championship, Lower Prem, First Team.
Yeah, he's not going to sit there and be like, wow, this 15-year-old was incredible in training today. I'm going to start him and bench Erling Haaland next week. He knows who his team's going to be, and you can make those deals accordingly. Gents, before we move on to talk about Peterborough, one more question for you. And I'm going to start with you first. Paul Warren in, Paul Warren out, or has he bought himself some time with this Fleetwood thing? And this is strictly saying that Corey is 100% middle of the road. I'm not the biggest Paul Warren fan, but I'm also not the fan of sacking managers on 3-year contracts or 4-year contracts willy-nilly, because sometimes it takes time to build something. So I'm just sitting middle of the road here on the fence with no agenda. Andy, because a lot of people were calling for Paul Warren's head against Fleetwood, and I think if they had lost against Fleetwood, we might be having an emergency podcast or a slightly different conversation. Has the Fleetwood Town win bought him more time? And if so, how much time? Or is he still on a very short leash?
When we lose the game, obviously some fans are, rather than have the head doors slept on it thoughts, are like a bull in a china shop and call for his head. I think we need to give him to the end of this window, then up to Christmas, provided we don't go on a disastrous run of defeat after defeat after defeat. And if we're sort of like sitting in the top 10 or so, come the new year and the opening of a new transfer window, then I would give him another transfer window. I don't think that he's going to take us up to the Championship and then into the promised land of the Premiership. I really don't. But his CV in League One, amongst current managers, is as good as any. And he's done it at Rotherham on numerous occasions. When he left Rotherham, didn't he leave them in 7th place in the Championship? So obviously his management style and his decisions have been they've had more success than failure. I know he's been relegated a few times, but Rotherham, with due respect to them, are a smaller club. Definitely wouldn't be replacing him right now. The fact of the matter is, those who are calling for his head, ask them who would they bring in? Because a lot of them, you know, couldn't really name any names as such. So provided there's no great disaster and we can be in that 10, top 10, and in touch with the top six at the turn of the year, I think Paul Warne stays. And it would probably be rather silly to get rid of him in that position. But I do stress that top six playoffs is an absolute minimum that we should be looking for this season. And if we don't get them, then ultimately it will be a failure.
I agree, Andy. And I think that's an interesting point that you raise and something that I always look at when people call for the heads of managers. It's who else are you going to get that's going to do any better? I mean, look at Leicester last year. They sacked Brendan Rodgers. They brought in Dean Smith and they had a one-way ticket to the championship. Is Dean Smith a better coach than Brendan Rodgers? Probably not. Could Brendan Rodgers maybe have saved them? Yes. There's maybe other factors in terms of players and teams and not playing for him and kind of maybe gone stale. But when you look mano a mano coaching ability wise, Brendan Rodgers is a better coach than Dean Smith, and Dean Smith couldn't save him. So I think it's important, Andy. You got to look at who else is available and who else is out there.
Dean Smith has done okay at Walsall, and he took over an underperforming Aston Villa side. It was filled with quality. He's certainly not a name that I would like linked with Derby County.
I'm not linking him at all, Andy. I agree with you. And you could see the situation. You mentioned Aston Villa, Steven Gerrard, same group of players. Unai Emery comes in, he takes them from a relegation team to into the Europa Conference League. So what I was saying there was you have to look at who's available. You have to look at who's a better coach, who's going to be a better fit. And if there's not somebody with Paul Warren's CV or who can do the job that Paul Warren can do without a massive squad rebuild, maybe you stick or you twist. That's a decision for David Clowes and the other person who's running the club, who I won't mention. Chris, over to you. Same question. How much time has the Fleetwood game bought Paul Warren?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with Andy in terms of, you know, you've got to give Warren the window and you've got to give him, you know, to Christmas. I think it'd be silly to do that. However, what I will say is that because of his style of football and because of his kind of banter, he leaves himself wide open, right? And, you know, kind of once, if and when the fans turn on him, you know, I don't care if you've got a 20-year contract, once the fans have turned on him, he's toast, right? So I don't think he's going to go anywhere. And I think when you talk about other names, by the way, you know what? Well, Darren Moore is a screamer because
he was at the game the other day.
Yeah. So he's got 96 points. He got Sheff Wednesday promoted. But I'm telling you right now, he is going to play exactly the same type of football as Warren. So all these people who kind of need to be careful what they wish for, because people are going, well, it's hoofball, which I don't think it is, by the way. But you know, kind of Warren has this attritional kind of style, which isn't probably the Derby way, whatever that is. And but as I say, because of that style of football, and we've seen it before with people like Rowett and Billy Davis, when you win, it's brilliant. But as soon as you start losing, it's horrible. And I think, as I say, because of Warren's kind of persona and his banter and his kind of, you know, the way he is, you know, again, that's when you're winning, that's brilliant and it's hilarious and it's dead funny. You know, when you're losing three games at home in the space of 10 days, it's not so funny, you know. And then he's an emotional guy as well. We've already seen him lose his head once this season, and that was like 10 days into the season. So what's he going to be like, you know, when people are shouting for him in October when we're like 13th, you know? And let's not lose sight of the fact he did kind of fail last season, because there's no way we should have missed the playoffs last season. So I'm not sitting here saying, you know, let's hang the guy. I totally agree with what Andy says. He should get the end of the window. And then he's got to be given 6 weeks, 2 months at least to let the players gel and see where we're going. But yeah, you know, I don't think that will be a Klaus decision. I think a bit like the signing of Martin Waghorn, I think when the fans decide it's happening, he's gone.
Chris, I'm not a big fan of his banter. I think it just really annoys me. I just watch it. And I'm like, I just don't know what to think of him. It's just really annoying. Not the biggest fan of him, but I agree. I agree with you and Andy. I think he needs to be given some time. I mean, we pulled the trigger maybe a little too late with Liam Racine here. Maybe we could have given Liam some more time. It's kind of a gray area. You've either got a stick or twist at some point. And if you're going to give him to the end of the window, you might as well keep him for a couple of months until the next window opens, because then they have extended time to look at the players. What we're going to do now, gents, we're going to move on to Peterborough. But first, we're going to hear where I spoke to BBC Radio Cambridge Peterborough reporter Nathan Albin earlier this week to talk about Posh. All right, we're going to go ahead and turn our attentions now to Derby's next game on Saturday against Peterborough United, the Posh. And joining me today is Nathan Albin. He is the BBC Radio Cambridgeshire Peterborough United reporter, commentator, and presenter. Nathan, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
No, pleasure. Nice to be on, especially after Posh's fairly good start to the season, at least better than Derby, that's for sure.
It is a different start to Derby. I was just looking at it, and Peterborough had been unbeaten in their first three league games of the season, but they did lose to Northampton at the weekend, which, when you look at it from the outside, the uninitiated here, kind of looks like a little bit of a shock. Tell me what happened with that game against Northampton, Nathan. Why was that result not probably the one that a lot of people anticipated?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise for all of us, really, after, like you say, such a strong start to the season, difficult fixtures on paper, Reading away, Charlton at home, Barnsley away, and that was three wins from three in the league. So did really well to get that. But then, yeah, like you say, visit to local rivals Northampton at the weekend, and it all just sort of went a bit wrong, a bit bizarrely after how the season started. The sort of quality in the final third really wasn't there, lots of shots off target, and it was just one of those days, I think, for the Posh, an off day. And I think that's something that you can expect from a Peterborough United style team, where it's made up of typically quite a few young players. There's bound to be a bit of inconsistency that comes with that. So I think this season, from a Posh fan's perspective, it's about sort of taking that rough with the smooth. And yeah, you might get the odd unexpected result along the way.
And I think, Nathan, if you do three wins on the bounce and then lose one, you'll be in pretty good stead come May at the end of the season. Expectations for Peterborough this season, Nathan, I think, from the outside looking in, Posh are a very good, very, very good, very, very good team in this division. They are probably a team that is, again, from my perspective, maybe a little bit too good for League One, but maybe not quite good enough for the Championship. They kind of yo-yoed between the divisions over the past couple of years. What are the expectations from the fans and from, you know, Darren Ferguson and from Darren McAnthony? What's the expectations across the club this season? Is it a promotion push? Is it to get top two? Is it to get playoffs? Is it to be in the Championship next year?
Yeah, it's a great question, because like you say, having been in the Championship so recently, the ambition is, of course, very much to get back there. Of course, reaching the playoffs last season, I don't think we need to go into what happened in the playoffs with the semi-final against Sheffield Wednesday, when we all thought we were already at Wembley, having won the first leg 4-0, only for things to sort of come crashing down at Hillsborough in the second leg. But yeah, I think the expectation for this season is a bit more reserved than it has been in recent seasons. Like I've been saying, there's been a bit of a more youthful approach when it comes to the signings. So seven players brought in, all under the age of 25 years old. So I think this season is very much about patience from a Peterborough United perspective. There's off-field, there's a few issues going on with the ownership and a certain amount of debt which the club wants to bring down. So gone are the days of perhaps spending, you know, £1 million plus on a player to bring them in, like we have done with Clark Harris before. It's all about sort of bringing the younger players through, and they have actually been some really quality acquisitions in this summer transfer window, likes of Archie Collins in midfield from Exeter City, the goalkeeper, Milokapic, who is impressed so far this season. We'll put his howler against Northampton to one side from that perspective. But yeah, I think expectations overall, I think Posh fans aren't expecting playoffs when perhaps, I don't know, last season, for example, the expectation was very much top six and then, you know, hopes of getting automatic promotion. Whereas this season, I think the expectation is maybe mid-table for then to go on next season and then have a really good run at it. But looking at Posh's start to the season, how quickly this team has gelled together and the performances that they've managed to put in, there's no reason why we can't be starting to look up the table now.
That's a good point, Nathan. And you know, success breeds expectations. And then sometimes it's often good for expectation management. If you think that you want to be in, you know, upper mid table to try to solidify, and then you get to the playoffs, shouldn't really, you know, that's still the ultimate goal. If you sneak into the playoffs, great, but there's no need to really, you know, sell out everything to try to push something when maybe the team is not as developed as what you would want it to be.
This is it. Yeah. With obviously a club of Peterborough's size, you're pretty much punching above your weight to get into the championship. And it's kind of a bonus being there, and you're not really expecting too much when Posh do get into the championship. And you compare that to a club of Derby's size, obviously getting what, 20,000-30,000 every week through the gate, and a big club with a big history, Premier League history, not that long ago. And I think the expectation for Derby very much is to be in the championship at the very least. So I think that pressure will always be there on the Derby players and the Derby management, and maybe a little bit less pressure from the Peterborough United side of things.
And Nathan, you mentioned something there that was in my notes that I kind of wanted to touch on very briefly. I don't want to necessarily get into the minutiae details because, as you're well aware, Derby have had ownership issues and new owners and administration over the past 18 months. And so I don't want to necessarily get into the minute detail or anything like that. And I'm very cognizant of your position as well. What's the general, give me the bottom line here about the issues with the Peterborough ownership. I know that there was Dermot Anthony is the chairman. He owns it with several other people. I know that there's a Canadians involved at some point. I believe that's where the rub is. Can you just give our listeners a, you know, kind of a 10,000 foot view of kind of the situation at Posh and how things are progressing and what's really causing it all?
Yeah, it's going to need to be a 10,000 foot view, maybe more than that, because there are such complexities involved in this. Even from a journalist perspective, it's really hard to dig in into the detail and work out exactly what's going on and who owes who what kind of money. So yeah, as you say, Darren McAntony, the chairman, if you like, of Peterborough United, brought in a couple of Canadian co-owners a good few years ago now, and they had a stake in the club. However, it looks like there's been a bit of a falling out off the pitch in terms of money being owed, debts needing to be paid, investors needing to be paid back in Canada. So it looks like Randy Thompson is looking to take back his debt, if you like, and the club owes this amount to him, or at least the other co-owners do. So there's a bit of to-ing and fro-ing as when it comes to debt recovery. There's been a repayment plan being involved here, and that there are some sort of final agreements still to be drawn up. So if you believe what the Posh side of things has to be, what Posh have been saying, rather, they're pretty confident that this kind of thing can be sorted out, that a deal can be done, and that McAntony looks like he might be keen to regain full control of the club in the long term. But it's all a bit of off-field distraction, which we're sort of getting used to as Posh fans. There's always something going on, whether it's the ownership or the rail seating, or there's always something that Posh fans like to get hot up about under the collar on social media. So yeah, hopefully things will be sorted out and we can just focus on things being positive on the pitch.
And for me, it was kind of a bit of a shock, really, when you read, because you think that Peterborough is such a well-run club, that Peterborough have been a well-run club, that you don't really expect these kind of issues to come from a club like Peterborough, because you're always like, well, we know that they have a pipeline of getting in talent, selling talent on for big money. They seem relatively well done. McAnthony's done a lot in terms of the training ground and trying to make improvements and getting ownership of different things. And then when you read articles that band around the A word of administration potentially, or, you know, the old points deduction kind of gets noticed. And that's in passing bits and pieces, you know, as the story kind of develops, you know, this could happen. You're kind of like, this kind of seems odd, because that's not how I would associate the ownership of Peterborough, because it's always normally pretty steady. Dara's very upfront with kind of things that he does and whatever, which is great. There's a lot of transparency there. And then it was kind of like, I don't really know what this is. So it kind of was a bit of a, again, from the outside looking in, you're kind of like, this just seems very un-Peterborough-like.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Dara McAnthony owned the club outright all by himself for so long and was just keen to bring in some co-ownership, to bring in some more money into the club, to really, you know, push forward with his ambitions for the club going forward. So yeah, as I say, hopefully things can be sorted out. Posh are saying there's absolutely no danger of the club falling into administration, and that there are, as I mentioned, you know, negotiations to sort out this settlement, which has been ongoing for a little bit too long for many Posh fans liking. But yeah, hopefully it can be sorted out, because like you say, Posh have typically been a well-run club. You know, they've had that model which has worked pretty successfully over time of bringing through players and selling them on for lots of money and sort of keeping that cash flow going, from that perspective, the likes of Ivan Toney, for example, just to name one. So yeah, hopefully things can be sorted out and we can be talking, you know, positively about Posh and Derby, you know, both going for promotion on the pitch.
That would be ideal. You just mentioned Ivan Toney there, and I want to talk about another kind of powerhouse striker that Peterborough still have on their books as of the time of recording. That's Johnson Clark-Harris. We know that Johnson Clark-Harris was made available for transfer. We know that there's reportedly a couple of championship clubs and reportedly maybe one or two League One clubs that are also interested in him. Can you tell us about his future? Will he still be a Posh player come, you know, the closing of the striking of the bell on deadline day? What's that situation? Is it just a situation where he's been at Peterborough for a long time? He's been a great servant. He's scored a lot of goals. And everybody's just like, hey, you know, maybe it's just time here, because when you try to get rid of your main striker, as Derby found out with David McGoldrick, it's difficult to replace 30 odd goals in and out of a team, especially for a team like Peterborough, which has ambitions. What's the Johnson Clark-Harris situation?
Yeah, so his situation is quite straightforward, really. So as with any Peterborough United player, it's sort of club policy that if they're going into their final year of their contract, then they'll automatically be put on the transfer list. And that is clearly the case with Johnson Clark-Harris, now into his final year on his Posh deal, having signed from Bristol Rovers a good few years ago. And yeah, he's on the list, and Posh are, you know, looking to cash in if the right bid comes in. Now, those are the key words, if that right bid comes in. We've heard from Dara McAnthony, like you mentioned, quite a transparent owner. He's very keen to put his side of the story out there through his podcast and social media, things like that. So through that, we know that there are already two League One clubs in for Clark-Harris. But McAnthony said if that figure isn't hit, then he won't go. So I think he's a good businessman. He's driving a hard bargain, which he tends to do, and that's obviously in the best interests for the club, because you like to think that if the right money doesn't come in, then arguably he's worth quite a lot of money if he's banging in plenty of goals for Posh, driving a promotion push. So I think, yeah, it will be a worrying time, the last sort of 10 days or so of the transfer window, as the clock ticks down, as that window starts to get closer to slamming shut. But yeah, we're all hoping that Johnson Clark-Harris will stick around, because, you know, his record speaks for itself. Two-time Golden Boot winner at this level, shared it last season with Connor Chaplin of Ipswich. So we don't want to lose his goals, because we just don't quite know who the next striker is that Posh would be planning to bring in should Clark-Harris leave. So we're sort of hoping that we don't lose an experienced striker like Clark-Harris, because, you know, from a Derby perspective, you know, like you mentioned, losing McGoldrick, it's a big gap to fill. So yeah, we're hoping that he stays. But as we say, if the right bid does come in, then hopefully we can make a bit of money and reinvest it elsewhere.
Maybe one of those league clubs, League One clubs that bid for him begin with a D and need a goal scorer. I don't know. Nobody knows, but we'll see come the end of the window. So Nathan, talk to me about when Derby travel to London Road, the the fans that are going to be there, the fans that are going to be listening to it and watching it. Who are the star players in this team outside of Clark Harris who they should watch? There's two that kind of come to my mind, again, from the uninitiated, and that's Harrison Burroughs at left wing back. And the other one is the England under 20 England international, yep, Ronnie Edwards, who has got reportedly Premier League interest. Are those two the star men to watch, or should we be keeping our eye on somebody else as well?
Well, that's interesting that those are the first two players that come to your mind, because they probably wouldn't have come out of my mouth. But that probably just shows the strength that Posh have all over the pitch. Burroughs now being played at left back in a back four. So he's dangerous getting forwards, putting in crosses from the left to try and feed the likes of Clark Harris. We've also brought in a new right back on loan from Rotherham, Peter Chioso. He's very dangerous, physical, quite aggressive, likes to get forwards from right back as well. So the fullbacks like to get forward. And then you've also got Mason Clark on the left-hand side, Poku on the right-hand side, and they're all sort of feeding in towards Clark Harris. So as you will have known from the most recent trip to London Road back in March, I think it was, when Mason Clark drilled that shot in at the near post, he's very much a danger. And Poku on the right-hand side, he can go on the left-hand side, he can go on the right, you know, whipping crosses in. Loves a ball roll as well, so your defenders should watch out for that one. Dummies one way and then goes the other. So, yeah, there's threats all over the pitch. And Randall as well in that number 10 role, Joel Randall. Probably his season, he's one to watch for Posh this season. He's had a pretty tough few years since joining from Exeter, has had various off-field issues, injuries as well. And he's starting to link play quite nicely in that number 10 role with the strength of strikers around him. So, yeah, it's an exciting Posh side to watch. And we've also got Hexa Kyprianou adding goals from midfield now as well. So, I mean, I could talk for hours about the threats that Posh have in their team. You just don't know where the threat's going to come from against Derby.
And I think that's a good thing to have as a team, because if one player is having an off day, another player might be having an on day. They don't all have to be on at the same time to be effective. They can kind of play off of one another, where sometimes, especially in League One, you have one or two star players or main men, and if they're not firing, your team's going to struggle. But at Posh, it seems like there's seven or eight players that are, you know, above the bell curve of average in the League One spectrum. So either of them can turn a game on their day, and they don't necessarily have to have all of them firing to be able to get results, which hopefully bodes well over a 46 or 48 game season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we could easily be sat here talking about the blow of losing a player of Jack Taylor's quality from midfield. He was sold to Ipswich Town in the Championship this summer, but we've just replaced him with Archie Collins from Exeter, who's a similar kind of player, likes to be really quick in transition, and he's dictating things from the base of midfield and really driving forward Posh from a deep position. So I think Posh have done well to replace Taylor with a player of Collins's quality. At least it looks like he's quality only a few games into his Posh career. So yeah, there's certainly reasons for optimism and positivity. And you've just got to hope that Posh can avoid these injury problems, which I know Derby County have been experiencing with the likes of Joe Ward, for example. So yeah, if Posh can stay injury clear, then it could be a very strong season.
So normally managers, there's a managerial merry-go-round that happens every year for all these clubs, right? It's the same people in the same hot seats, and then they basically just change track suits and they rip the Velcro badge off and they stick another on. But Posh is very interesting because when they replace Darren Ferguson, they hire Grant McCann. And when they replace Grant McCann, they hire Darren Ferguson. So in the hot seat for Posh this time, in the ever-revolving door, is Darren Ferguson. How is Darren Ferguson going to set this Posh team up against Derby? What tactically does he like to do? You mentioned the forward, the back. How does he like to play the game and view the game in order to get Peterborough to be the best versions of themselves?
Yeah, it's that 4-2-3-1 formation, like I mentioned, with Burroughs and Chioso at fullback, and then a base two in midfield of Kyprianou and Collins, and then Poku on the right, Randall in the 10. Mason Clark on the left and Clark Harris up top. And that's been a near enough unchanged lineup for the Posh so far this season. If you're Derby coach Paul Warne, you know exactly what to expect. Efron Mason Clark only missed one game, I think, through injury on that left-hand side. So, yeah, you know what you're coming up against as Derby manager. It'll be interesting to see what lineup he names, given his injury problems. I think I've seen Mendes Lang deployed at wing-back, for example. So there's been some interesting little reshuffles, which he won't have liked so early in the season for Derby County. So whether that unpredictability is a threat in itself for Derby, then we'll have to wait and see. But certainly, you know what you're going to get from Peterborough United, as I mentioned with Collins, liking to pick up the ball in deep positions and spread the play and nice one-touch passing through the thirds. It's really exciting, silky football to watch at times from the Passion. And there's pace in wide areas as well. So, yeah, I think you know what you're going to get. And the threats are all over the pitch, like we've been talking about. So the goals could really, really come from anywhere.
I was going to ask you about strengths next, but we talked about the fullbacks. We talked about the attacking verve. You just answered it there, where they can really kind of turn it on at any time. Where are the weaknesses in this Posh side? Give me some hope here, Nathan. Give me some hope, please, that there are some weaknesses that Paul Warren can go and exploit and Derby can get a result. Where are those weaknesses come from?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I think the weaknesses were maybe shown a little bit against Northampton last weekend in the 1-0 defeat at Sixfields when things weren't going so well for the starting 11, lack of ruthlessness in front of goal, unable to get shots on site. And then you turn to your bench. Darren Ferguson brought on, I think, three players around the 70-minute mark, and none of them really made much of an impression. In fact, probably made the team worse overall. So I think when you're looking past that starting 11, there's certainly a debate to be had about sort of squad depth and whether Peterborough United necessarily have that quality when you look to the bench. So maybe if, you know, Posh were to pick up an early injury, for example, maybe that's something to look out for on Saturday against Derby County. Another potential area of weakness, you mentioned Ronnie Edwards earlier, the centre-back. He's very composed, calm on the ball. You can see why Premier League clubs are interested in him. However, he's not the tallest of centre-backs. Neither is Romany Critchlow, centre-back brought in this transfer window, former Huddersfield Town defender. So I think that could be one area which Derby may look to exploit. I know they like to get balls in the box from wide areas, Derby County under Paul Warren. So if they can get a big striker up there to try and nod things towards goal, maybe that could be a source for Derby County to get one over against the Posh.
Nathan, normally I ask all the guests for a score prediction, but I'm cognizant of your position, so I'm not going to push you on a score prediction. But I am going to ask you, Derby County versus Peterborough, London Road, on Saturday. Essentially, on paper, it looks like it's two of kind of the division's preseason heavyweights, right? Obviously, the Bolton's up there. There's a couple of the teams. Some teams will adjust fire accordingly as the season goes on. But when you look at it on paper, these are teams that finished sixth and seventh in the league last year. They're two of the recently relegated championship, you know, come down from the championship into League One. They both should be, in theory, competitive up near the playoffs or challenging for the playoffs, if not for automatic promotion. How do you view this game going into it?
Yeah, I think it's probably a good time to be playing Derby County, given their injury problems with Wilson, Ward and Bird, I think, all ruled out for at least 8 weeks. So that's a real blow for Paul Warren so early in the season. I suppose you could look at that as a positive that Derby have a good few days left of the transfer window to try and put things right. But yeah, I think certainly from that perspective, it's a good time to be playing Derby if you're Peterborough United manager Darren Ferguson. And you're looking to make the most of that. Posh having fielded a pretty settled starting 11 so far this season and done, as we've been saying, pretty well up to this point. So I think you're optimistic going into this one, especially at home. Remember the 2-0 win for Posh towards the end of last season. So there's a bit of positivity to be taken from that as well. And you're coming up against a much changed Derby County 11, where perhaps the strikers are yet to really find their shooting boots. Waghorn and Washington still sort of trying to find that link up. So I think it's a good time to be playing Derby, and you're probably optimistic for a Posh win.
Fair enough. Nathan Alban, BBC Radio, Cambridge, Peterborough United reporter, commentator and presenter. Nathan, thanks so much for taking the time to give us some insights into Posh. Should be an interesting game.
Yeah, looking forward to it. All the best for the season as well. I hope we're both up there come the end of it.
Okay, gents, Peterborough and Derby, London Road on Saturday. In theory, when you look at it on paper, when you look at the preseason paper, it's kind of a tasty fixture. It's two teams that Peterborough pipped us for the playoffs. It's essentially two playoff caliber teams, two of the bigger heavy hitters in this league. Chris, you first. Derby and Peterborough, London Road on Saturday. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts going into this match? It's going to be a big game, isn't it? And it's an important game for Derby.
Yeah, well, the next two are hard, aren't they, on paper? Our recent record at London Road isn't good. If we play like we did at Burton, they will swarm all over us and we're going to have a problem. I think it's a tough day. Peterborough have not had a stellar start themselves, have they, I don't think. And I'm not sitting here thinking, I have this conversation quite a lot. You know, when we're in the Championship, we look at Peterborough and Bolton away and think, all right, we'll win. There's two good ones. We'll win there. And like in League One, we're like, oh, these are the hardest, potentially two of the toughest away games, we're going to have. So, London Road's not the easiest place to go to. Which Derby County is going to turn up? Are we going to have any new faces? I think right here, right now, I'm taking a draw.
Andy, how are you viewing this game?
Yeah, I would take a draw right now. Peterborough, didn't they have a 100% record up to Saturday and then lost?
They did,
Saturday.
And then they lost surprisingly to Northampton.
Yeah, just shows what sort of division it is. They're a well-run side. They're a well-run club. They several times they've picked up players that have been disregarded by other teams, brought them into their side, have scored goals or assists, and they've sold them on for a profit. Connor Washington was one of them in the past. Obviously, we're all too familiar with Jack Marriott. Craig McHale Smith was another.
Guy named Ivan Tony, I've heard of him.
Yeah, and some other guy, can't remember his name, from that team down the road as well. They did well out of him. McAntony, he runs the club well, and he's got Ferguson again. Darren Ferguson's took them up several times now from this division up into the Championship, but they've never been able to kick on from there. It's a ground where, going all the way back to the Nigel Clough times. In fact, I can remember in the Arthur Cox era when they came to the baseball ground and turned us over. They seem to be one of those teams that we don't do particularly well against. 9 points out of 12. It's going to be a tough one, but it'd just be typical of Derby to go and win. But I'd snatch your hand off for a point right now.
I would agree with you, Andy, and I would agree with you, Chris. I would take a point right now. Peterborough kind of scare me. They have threats all over the field. Johnson Clark Harris, whether he will still be there. As of the time of recording, he's still a Peterborough player. Whether he'll be there on Saturday, whether he'll be there at the end of the window, remains to be seen. But they've got threats all over the field. They've got an England under 20 international and Ronnie Edwards that's got Premier League interest. Harrison Brose is a good player. They've got Mason Clark as well. They've got a lot of different attacking options in Verve. And I think it's going to be a good litmus test, because I think it'll prove, assuming that Peterborough are going to be, in and around the playoffs, it's a tough game. We've got like Chris said there, a couple of tough games coming up. It's a real big litmus test for us. I take a point from this game. That would be 4 points from two games. I would be extremely happy with that. So hopefully we go in and hopefully we get a result with that. Andy, Chris, before I let you go, we're going to hear from my chat earlier last week with Amy Sims, the Derby County women's captain. Today, we wanted to take a look at the season preview. We did it for the men's team. We want to take a look at the season ahead for the UE Rams, for the Derby County women's team, as they start their season on Sunday. And we thought there was nobody better to join us than friend of the podcast and now Derby County women's captain, Amy Sims. Amy, how the heck are you?
Yeah, really good. It's been a busy preseason, but really looking forward to starting.
So, Amy, I want to start Before we talk about Derby and before we talk about you and this, your hopes for the season ahead, I want to start with the success of the Lionesses earlier this morning for me, as I woke up bleary-eyed to watch the match against the Matildas. Excited that England will be playing in a World Cup final against Spain on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Like, they just keep going from strength to strength, don't they? I think, you know, with them winning the Euros, and then you kind of looked at it with some injuries that they had in the team, and it just not seemed to have fazed them. They've not even necessarily, you know, played their best football, and they've got to a final of a World Cup. And, you know, I think they've picked the right time to get in on the goal action with the three goals today. So, yeah, it's really exciting time.
And I think the thing that stood out for me in this tournament, Vice America getting knocked out in the second round. Let's not talk about that. That's not on the agenda today, Amy. Is just the quality of the tournament. Vice 4 years ago, right? When you looked at it 4 years ago, you looked at an England team, or you looked at a Spain team or a Sweden team, and they were looking at really, and this is not to be rude to any of them, just my own opinion, you're probably looking at a squad of maybe 13, 14 decent players, and then there were a lot of squad fillers there that were still good, but probably not at the, you know, the drop off after you got the 13 or 14 in the squad was rather significant. And I think in the 4 year period, I always try to look at it as a 4 year period of football, you know, World Cup to World Cup. How's the game changed? How's it matured? What kind of new tactical things are we looking at? And this Women's World Cup stood out to me that, one, the quality has immensely improved through the entire teams in the tournament. And two, when you get to the subs now, these teams, they used to be bringing on girls and ladies on late on that you'd be like, okay, they're really, you know, whatever. But now they're bringing players on that are of the quality, if not better than some of the starting players, which for the growth of the game has to be a great thing to see, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's massive. Like, you've seen the players that are coming on and contributing to the goals, like super subs, as you call them. But like you said, I think in previous years, you've not necessarily had the squad that you've wanted to go and travel to a tournament with, but tournament football is all about the squad, and you've got to be able to rotate players in and out, and that's probably where, you know, England have got their success. You know, Serena always talks about this squad, and from the Euros you saw it with Toon and Russo coming in, and, you know, now they've cemented their place in the starting squad, and it's other players coming off the bench to do the exact same. So yeah, I think it's exciting times, and other teams tend to be doing the same now.
And you mentioned they're exciting times, and this is a perfect segue, Amy, because I'm not gonna ask you or Jack, who's alongside me today, I'm not gonna press either of you for prediction, because as I've learned, the first rule about Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. So we're not gonna make any predictions, because I we're just not gonna do that. We're gonna just let that one go. We're gonna move on. But it is exciting times, Amy, for Derby County women as well. The last time we spoke, the news had just been announced that in the summer, the Derby County women's team would come under the same holding company and the same club as the men's team. So it would be one unified kind of club rather than a club and part in a club and part out of a club, that you guys would have a space at Moor Farm training facility, where I know that you're off to training tonight at Moor Farm. And that you would be made part of the club, in totality as in terms of contracts and different things like that. So, Amy, when we spoke last time on the podcast, the news had just come out that the women's team was going to be more integrated into Derby County Football Club as a whole, which it was, but it also kind of wasn't, in kind of not a strange way. I guess it's not uncommon for women's football, but under the new ownership, David Klaus wanted to bring the women completely under to the Derby County Football Club banner. You guys now have a space at Moor Farm, where I know you're off to training tonight. So how has life changed for you as a player for the UE Rams from the last time we spoke to now, having signed that contract, now having been a part of the football club proper, which you always were, but contractually and having the facilities and things like that? How's life changed for you and the player and the girls in the dressing room?
Yeah, I think it's more just like the access. It's increased massively. You know, we've gone to 3 times training sessions a week now. So we do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we've got a full Wednesday that's just dedicated to S&C and your fitness side of stuff. Whereas before, you kind of had to squeeze that into your Tuesday and Thursdays. Then you're missing out on that footballing time that you really need. So we get to have a lot more football time on a Tuesday and Thursday and kind of dedicate that to a Wednesday. And then we have our hub now that's just fully dedicated to us. So the girls can go into that before, after training, and it's just a place that we can do like our analysis. So throughout pre-season, we've kind of joined in there and gone for our games, and it's just kind of like feeling like you've got your own space in Moore Farm, rather than it being like, oh, am I allowed to go into that bit? Am I allowed to? Whereas actually, you know, you're part of the club now, you've got your own section, but also we're using the gym, we're using the training facilities. So I think that access has been really good. And then also, like, although we've not got it yet with the kit, you know, I think just things like that, getting the men's like actual kit with the away and the third team kit this year, whenever it comes, we're actually, you know, getting that kind of same thing that the men's team would get. Whereas previous seasons, you know, we'd get our first team kit with our names on, but then the away kit, we'd just have our numbers on, because then it'd have to be reused for pre-season the next year and stuff. Just like little things like that, that just make you feel a lot more part of the club in general.
And Amy, you've been part of the setup for quite a while. So, you know, for you to continue to see this growth of the club, and you're a Derby County supporter as well, you know, it must be an incredibly proud moment for you to not only be a supporter, but to see the consistent growth in the game, and then the investment that this club's putting into you and the other girls in order to excel and achieve more and more and more. And my assumption is here that it must be incredibly awe-inspiring and really lift the levels in training and in games when you know that you have these facilities, because players want to be there. They want to train at Moore Farm. They want to be able to have access to the gym. They don't want to, you know, get released or transferred. They want to be part of the club now, not saying that they didn't want to be in the beforehand, but, you know, it must kind of lift the levels a little bit to sit here and go, this club's getting serious about this. I need to up my game so I can make sure that I'm still remaining part of this while it's trending upwards.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know that if you want to be competitive in this league, you're going to have to offer players, you know, the best of the best, because otherwise they will go to other teams. And I think the whole point of what we want to do at Derby is to bring academy players through to the first team. And you're only going to be able to do that if you pave a pathway that's exciting for younger players, that they're going to be able to progress and actually hopefully one day have it as a full-time career as well. So then you're not going to lose, you know, your best players to the likes of Championship or WSL teams, because hopefully you'll be in a pathway to get in there yourself. But yeah, just for the players this year as well, you know, players that have been here for a long time, new players that are coming in, you know, they're all impressed with the setup and you know, the training facilities and everything. So it shows that, you know, it's helping to build not only players that we've already had before and up their game, but new players coming in, they're just as impressed, and hopefully it will allow us to bring in more and more players with, you know, the progress of what's going on in the game as well.
And when we talk about progress, I want to talk about your progress a little bit, Amy, because I saw the announcement come out, and I was absolutely buzzing for you, as I know Jack was and Jason as well. Amy Sims, Derby County ladies captain. What? Give me your thoughts about the conversation becoming captain and what it means to you to lead the UE Rams this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a really proud moment, not just for me, for my family as well. You know, growing up, my mum took me to my first Derby game. Then we got a season ticket with my uncle and cousin. So watching the games at Pride Park, and then actually being able to play at Pride Park, and like this year leading the girls out at Pride Park, it's just a full circle moment really. And playing with the academy teams, you know, I remember being a captain of like the under 10 teams, so it just feels like a full circle moment of, you know, being captain of the academy team to then come to the first team and get the captain. And yes, it just shows as well that I think it's that extra bit of confidence boost from your manager as well. If they believe in you to become captain, then it's kind of like, oh, yeah, she really does feel that I can really help grow and support this team in the way that we both want to. You know, we, like I say, with the girls coming up in the academy, hopefully they can see me as a role model. I've come up through the Derby Academy and now first team captain. So why can't they?
And Amy, I'm incredibly proud to see how you continue to grow into the role this season, and I think it's very, very well deserved. What kind of captain are you going to be? Are you going to be somebody that's you know, giving them the business, or are you going to be somebody that's going to put their arm around them and try to lift them up, or are you experienced enough as a player to understand which players need which and try to manage try to manage those personal relationships as people need it.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit more experienced now to know what each player needs. I think, you know, we really do have a split of youngsters and older players, and I think we've got leaders within the team that can help me with that. But you know that if you're absolutely shouting and effing and jeffing at a younger player, that they're just going to look at me with starstruck eyes, like, what is this girl shouting at me for? So I think I'm definitely more of a leader that leads by example. You know, they'll see me putting in a good tackle, or, oh, Amy's trained really hard tonight. Right, that's the level that we're at. I need to be at that level. So definitely more a lead by example. But I think, you know, if the time was to come of it, sometimes you've got to be brutal.
Yeah, you really have at times, I guess, to, you know, strive for the high standards that are in this league now. I mean, we saw last season standards getting higher. I think they're only going to get higher again this year. If you look around the league as well, you've got, you know, Forest obviously didn't go up. Now Champions will go up. That's going to make a big difference in terms of everyone striving for promotion, knowing that if you win the league, you're guaranteed to go up, right? That's got to be a little bit of extra motivation as well for the players in all the teams.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as all the teams have been saying for the past couple of seasons, that it's crazy that if you win a league, you don't go up. So yeah, it's really nice having that incentive of you don't have to play a playoff and potentially stay in the league this year. But like you said, you've got Forest that won the league last year. You've got Wolves and Burnley that were only a couple points off. You've got Newcastle that have gone full time. So it's just going to be such an exciting season. And obviously we're wanting to be one of those teams that's facing them up there at the top.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge for anybody, isn't it, in that sense. But I think this Derby team, is it fair to say, you look at, they started last season and what we were talking about with it being a young team who are building and kind of with a season under their belts and a good run in the second half of last season, this Derby team is in a stronger position than it was a year ago, isn't it? That's definitely something that I've noticed with all the changes off the pitch as well, with, as Corey said, you're all being contracted now. So I think, you know, what are your thoughts compared to when we sat here a year ago? More optimistic?
Yeah, definitely. I think we were all pretty open with our pre-season probably wasn't the best last year. But this year we've really been able to hit the ground running, get the formation right, what Sam wants us to play. And I just think we've been able to bring in a good mix of experienced players and younger players that are dual signed. So, you know, we've got two players that came over from Forest, but obviously they won the league last year, so that's two players that have already know how to win the league, you know. And then we've got a few younger players from academy teams that came for women's football, and you know, their technical ability is so good, they're so talented. So now it's just teaching them the in and outs of the league, and you know, they've all fit in really well. So I think we're definitely in a much better position as a team as a whole from last year. Everyone that stayed, you know, we've had a year experience with each other under the belt, and then now you've added extra talent into that, we're definitely in a much better position this year.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, as well, the other thing to mention for people who've not necessarily tracked the transfers over the summer, that's with only a couple of departures. I mean, we've had the retirement of Megan Clarkson, and then Kira Barry returned to a parent club. But the core of that squad is still together, which is a difference from last year when, again, we were talking about kind of a few new players and gelling a bit more. So it's positive, isn't it? It's just from a fan perspective, I feel much more positive. And it does seem that's reflected from what I'm seeing from, you know, interviews and just the team in general. So, yeah, someday will be a big day in more ways than one, won't it? That's
it certainly will, Jack. And Amy, you know, with the increased competition that obviously breeds continually good competition throughout the squad in training and matches, it gives Sam Griffiths, the manager, some potential selection headaches, because now you have, you know, like we talked about at the opening, you have more squad depth now than probably what you've had in, you know, 2 or 3, maybe 4 years. You've got players who came in from a title winning side at Forest, or a side that finished top at Forest. So they're going to understand what the level is required to get out of the division. I always think it's good to bring players in like that, because they can sit there and say, you might think you're doing enough, but you need to do this extra 5% because that's what we did. And then you can sit there and go, well, he had success with it last year. Who's to argue with that? Plus, that also weakens a rival. We love the whole weakening of the Nottingham Forest rivals. That's the best part. But, you know, Amy, I was looking at the squad, and when we first started talking 18 months ago, you were a hard charging right back who was getting stuck into tackles and everything like that. We spoke last year where you converted into like a midfield role, and now you're listed as a forward. So talk about the positional change and the positional evolution of Amy Sims from rough tackling defender, not rough tackling as in bad, but I'm just saying like hard working, grafting, getting stuck in, letting them know that you're there, to now leading the line for Derby County.
Yeah, so it was kind of, came back for pre-season last year, and Sam just kind of said, I want to try you in this midfield role. Obviously, we didn't have that many experienced players, a lot of players leaving. So kind of went in that role the first game of pre-season and never kind of escaped the role. But I really like that midfield role. Last season, I got a lot of success off the third man run. And I just love playing there. Probably was surprised at the amount of goals that I was able to get in the midfield role. But obviously I'll take them all the more. But yeah, going into next season, still in that like midfield / forward kind of role, higher midfield role. But I think it kind of works in your favour, because you know other positions on the pitch, and you can always use that to your advantage. So in 1v1 situations, I always feel quite comfortable, because when you're playing right back, you're very exposed in 1v1 situations, and you're always going to be the same in the midfield area. And it just allows me to kind of adapt my role. Not only can I focus on the attacking front, but I've also got that defending side of things locked in from many, many seasons at right back. So yeah, I think it's just transferring some of those skills that I had at right back, and allow myself to wander a bit more forward and get in on the goal action rather than trying to keep a clean sheet.
I said to Jack and Jason last year, because you were on this incredible scoring streak, I don't know how many consecutive games you scored or whatever, but it was like, water is wet and Amy Sims scores goals. You can take that to the bank. Life, death, taxes, and Amy Sims scoring goals, because it just felt like every week you were just popping them in. It was absolutely, absolutely fantastic to see. Back onto the team, Amy. With you kicking off against Wolves on Sunday, obviously Sunday's a big day for the reasons we discussed previously. What is the hope this season? We know what the hope is results-wise. I think the expectations are probably higher now, maybe within the club and the group, than probably what they have been in previous years, because of the quality you brought in, because of the success you had last season, because of that automatic spot. But continuing to see the game grow and develop from a Derby County perspective, because we know you've got the WSL, you've got the league below the WSL, and then you've got where you guys are. Mm-hmm. If England, well, whatever happens, England's had a very successful tournament. What is the hope as the football club? Is last year you had great crowds, you had great attendances, you started to continue to grow that fan base. Are you hopeful that support even becomes more fervent and there's more support this year, based off of the success of what the Lionesses do, and sitting there and saying, I watched the Lionesses at the Women's World Cup. It was a good standard. I really enjoyed it. You know, whatever happened, happened. But now I can go and support my local team, and I need to go down to support Derby County. Is that what the hope is? That, because we've talked about building a culture, continuing to build a fan base. It's continuing to build that, isn't it? And continuing to get slightly larger crowd out week after week after week, and continue to grow that fan base.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's really about growing that attendance at the local level, because, you know, you'll probably get massive attendance growth in your WSL and your championships, but you want local girls to come and watch us play. So it's about us raising our standards, raising our profile. You know, I think joining with the men's will really help with that, because you've got the men's social media accounts that will hopefully help promote our games too. But yeah, I think it's just making sure that, you know, local girls can feel that they can come and you know, watch the Derby games than rather having to travel a little bit further to your Aston Villas, and which is all great. You want them to watch the best football and at that top level. But I think we've got to grow our fan base so it's getting even better as well. And I think off the back of the Euros, it grew massively, which we probably weren't expecting as many to come down locally. But yeah, it really grew. So I think it can only get bigger off the success of the World Cup. And then I guess it's just up to us to make sure that we're setting our standards on the pitch and raising the game in our way as high as possible as we can get.
And that's your job, Amy, as captain, to make sure that the standards don't drop, and you need to be on them if they do. Before I let you go, Amy, because I know you don't run to training, save your energy for training, but I know you have to get to training. If you had a message for a listener or viewer of this segment of this episode, or what would you say to a Derby County supporter who's kind of on the fence or sitting there thinking, you know, I don't know whether really to give them a go or whatever. What would you say to them to entice them to come on down to watch the UE Rams this season?
I think just come and give it a go. I think talking a lot from people that have come down the first time coming and supporting, they're pleasantly surprised. So I think come down, give it a go. You'll get in free with your season ticket if you're a Derby fan. The worst case, you've just lost a couple of hours on a Sunday, but I promise you it won't feel like that. You'll come down, you'll watch us play, you'll want to come back for more, and then you'll hopefully be following not only the men's team, but the women's team. So yeah, I think out of anything, just come and give it a go and show your support, because, you know, the girls really appreciate it, and it really does help. The more supporters we see in the crowd, it just really help boost our performance as well. So if anything, you'd just be boosting the girls and supporting the Derby team.
And Amy, I lied. There was one more question for you as well. That's really good. That's very good. And I'm hopeful of making the trip over this autumn. So if I'm able to do it and the time sync up and everything like that and locations and whatnot, I will be front row and center. And I may even make you a sign. We'll see. We'll see. I may even make you a sign. And Jack will be there as well. We'll both have signs.
Yeah, I will just say now as well. I will be there as much, you know, hopefully a bit more this season, get some more, you know, coverage integrated into the podcast over the season, so for people to track the season if they can't get there, or they just want the same kind of analysis reaction that you enjoy with us, hopefully for the men's team, we will have, you know, we'll have more of that. I know that's something that a few people asked us for, so we're building on that, and hopefully be a good season. The other thing, I guess, to mention actually is there is, if anyone wants information on Wolves ahead of the game, there is a Wolves Women podcast somewhere. Just search them up on Twitter or something and find out about the opposition through there ahead of Sunday. So, yeah, just for research purposes, yeah. Anyone wants to get more involved in, you know, more knowledge ahead of the game, as we build up to what will be a huge day on Sunday, I don't think we can kind of overstate how big that is. Then yeah, so it's 2 o'clock as it stands, 2 o'clock kickoff at Don Amos Arena in Mittelover.
Yeah, that's a good point there, Jack. And we are trying to expand our coverage and making sure that's a little bit more concise and catching up with Amy and the girls at regular intervals. So Amy, before I let you go, I meant to mention this at the beginning, but I got too excited and skipped over this point in my notes. In addition to being named Derby County Women's Captain, you've also been mentioned in Derby County Memorable Moments as the first woman to ever score at Pride Park Stadium. What's it mean for you as a Derby supporter, as someone who's been through the club, through all age groups, who's obviously now captaining the team, but to have your picture adorned in the tunnel for the opposition and all the teams to see, and to be part of that memorable moment of this club's long and storied history?
Yeah, it's amazing, because then you're actually, you know, part of Derby history. And also, like, whenever I'm at Pride Park, you know, whenever you go up to the suites for presentation night, or you're in the tunnel when you're playing at Pride Park, there's never any photos of, like, the women's team. So I'm always like, oh, it'd be really cool if, like, there was a photo of one of the women's players there. So for that to be me, it's just a really proud moment. And yeah, it was just really cool to see, and can't wait to see it when I actually get to go to Pride Park and walk out for the tunnel. I think that'll be really special for the first time I see it.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for your time this evening. Thank you for your dedication to the cause at Derby, and we look forward to a successful season and catching up with you later. I know you have to go to training, so I am going to let you go. Yeah, training at Moore Farm as well. So Amy Sims, Derby County Ladies Captain. Amy, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us, and best of luck this season, and we'll catch up soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. See you soon.
So, Chris, Andy, the UE Rams obviously lost on Sunday as well. We're not going to talk about the World Cup final. Commiserations to England. Congratulations to Spain on that. And obviously, we'll, on the podcast, continue to catch up with Amy and the rest of the UE Rams squad over the course of the season, and continue to update everybody as things progress there. Andy, Chris, thanks for spending the last three quarters of an hour with me. Again, my social calendar and things always open, so it's always a pleasure to fill that with talking to you two fine gentlemen about Derby County. Looking forward to the game on Saturday. And again, you know, it's kind of a big, we've been saying this for a while, but, you know, there's these big periods of time for Derby. And I think the next 10 days is going to be another big period where we've got a couple of tricky games. We need to get some warm bodies in the door to help with the squad depth and to help with the squad overall. We need depth. We need players. And we need to make sure that they can fit the ethos and want to play for Derby. So big 10 days. And Andy and Chris, you know, thank you for coming on the podcast last season and in seasons before. And I hope you enjoyed your debut podcast this season. Andy Buckley, Taylor, Chris Smith, Chris, Andy, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, pleasure, Corey. Always anytime.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Corey. I'll speak to you again soon.
Sure will. And the last thing to say, guys, is we will see you next week as we will look ahead to the game against Bolton Wanderers. Last thing to say is up the Rams.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at Rams Review 1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast. Or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.